Nyamni lekor charabala lekor charab kolle nyamni jeba den yonzu jirwaj.
Please begin by singing the song in the chapter about Balarapa's meeting with Lekor Charawa called Equality and the Seven Things to Forget.
Yeah.
This is on page 2.
Kanji doma gunda meji sanji nira nantan sanji nene mati dosenji metaba lantan chenji rata dorji jonantan anyuga jonsi natsi tatarji ko te son sengpa jingzi te la wala su tan
jorba kike sumba jorba kike pala Yanda paye jorwa la, jokwa yana nam jiti. Mekwa yena jorwa ta, memek paye jorwa ta. Mekwa memek jorwa ta, memek mekwa jorwa wo.
On page 147, are the instructions about the four applications.
Paye jorwa Joba yane namje, meba yane jorwa, meme paye jorwa, meba meme jorwa, meme mekwe jorwa.
We'll recite together.
Tirire.
The introduction.
Deva, yan takwa ye jorwa lan jokwa te yan. Namba yete. Tangboram Tomar Kondeji Chutamje Semtando Mekba Yene Jovalin Jobata Semtando Mekba de Semte Yemeba Semtando Mekba Jovalin Jobata Telatene Semtando Mekba Jova Telatene Surja Zuma Mamekba Zuma Sirta Mamepa Jovalan Jopata Zuma Sirta Mamepa Jova Telatene Zuma Le Mekwam Mekwam Zemba Nijam Mamepa Jovalan Jopata Telatene Zuma Tan Zemba Kantoyam Mamekwar Te Yinyam Te Konanyam Tontambam Chujinga Mekwa Jovala Jopu Chorje Number Motobi Hichiba him, Hibarasau. Yeah.
The introduction to practicing wisdom correctly entails the following four specific aspects, four steps. The first is to engage in practice involving something to focus on, namely, that all phenomena are mind only. So the first thing you do is determine that the appearances of outer objects are nothing other than mind. Whatever phenomenon it might be, it is nothing other than mind. So outer objects here means not only the appearances of the five sense objects, but also what you think about, the objects of your thoughts and your feelings. Whatever might be something that you perceive with your mind, it doesn't exist apart from your mind. So when it says practice involving something to focus on, that means you focus on all phenomena as being only the mind. With that as the basis, one engages in practice involving nothing existing that could constitute a perceived object on which to focus. So first you determine that all perceived objects are only mind. And then second, practice involving nothing to focus on means once you know that, then you know that there really is no perceived object. With that as the basis, one engages in practice involving no subject to focus on, i.e. where there is no perceiver in relation to something perceived at all. So first you've seen that all objects are only mind. Then the implication of that is that there is no perceived object outside. And now third, since there's no outer perceived object, then there can be no inner perceiving subject. Because there's nothing to perceive, there can be no perceiver. That's number three. With that as the basis, one engages in practice whose focus is the suchness, in which there is nothing of perceived and perceiver on which to focus at all. So the fourth, the practice whose focus is nothing to focus on, is to rest in the nature of suchness, the precise nature of reality, that is empty of the duality of perceived and perceiver. One should know that this is how non-conceptual, original wisdom is discovered.
Tene zumpen kando ya mamekpa te kono ni le mikpa la jupu rambha khebare.
This is the way to... These four describe the steps that you go through in order to rest in suchness that has no focus on perceived or perceiver, that is non-dual.
Tela siddhun rang yi me par to la la. Siddhun rang yi me pa to pa tele zemba me me pa jova to kawa so je so korem yi ndo jule che zorte jo nama to pe tingin zin so so sungpa ta zon rao.
And if you wonder why the order goes like this, that question is answered in the next paragraph. The order of these corresponds to their progressive order of development in the mind stream, since it is easier to understand that outer objects do not have a substantial makeup than to understand the more difficult point of there being no perceiver on which to focus on, and so on. As has been taught in the samadhi wherein the appearance of heat is attained, and elsewhere. So it's easier to figure out that there is no outer object. Mind is more subtle, so then you deal with that next. You see there's no perceiving subject, and then you can understand how there's no duality.
Yanda baye jorwa Joba yane namje Me baye ne jorwa Me me baye jorwa Me ba me me jorwa Me 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 be jorwa.
If you recite this verse, and when you do, you think about the stages of this process of resting in recognizing and resting in non-dual awareness, then your certainty will get greater and greater.
Tanya ba ya jabin dobre. Sema pamba la jubala. Nyeba sema pamba la jubba yana nam yete. Muntun pa da nyebo da te yin yi da toba ye. Sema ta na pambe so. Dine ramba cheta yi. Rada rengta tramo da. Rengta jisun rewa ye. Sema yon su pamba yin so.
Now we're going to go backwards to page 143.
Together, the second which treats
Younger.
Nyeba lom sin je. The second,
which treats of surrendering the attributes associated with a pretentious attitude, is also introduced by way of 4 points, since there are 4 such attributes to be surrendered. So here, pretentious attitude means to be fixated, to have a fixation on these characteristics. And the reason why it's called pretentious is that to be pretentious or arrogant means that you assume something is there which is not. Now normally that would be a quality in oneself. But here it refers to assuming or projecting some existence onto the nature of reality which is not there. So it has this sense of conceit, of believing in something which is inaccurate. And so there are 4 different types of this clinging that are surrendered in successive order. And first is, to pick up in the middle of the third line, namely, the attribute of clinging to what is unfavorable, meaning such factors as desirous attachment and so on. So the first thing you give up is clinging to the characteristics of the 5 poisons, desire, anger, stupidity, jealousy, and pride. Then second, the attribute of clinging to the remedies through which the former are relinquished, such as the idea of repulsiveness and so on. So, for example, if you want to abandon desire, then you meditate on the object of your desire as being repulsive. That's the remedy for desire. And that's given up second. Then third, the attribute of clinging to the focal object, the suchness. So third, what's abandoned is your concept of emptiness. And fourth, as well as the attribute of clinging to the 10 powers and other factors accompanying realization, such as clinging to there being someone realizing, a correct view resulting from the path, and so on. So the last thing you give up is clinging to the fruition, clinging to realization. All these conceptual patterns are unfavorable to actualizing original wisdom. And that is why it has been taught that surrendering them leads the way to the attainment of wisdom in its full purity.
Semar zemba yepoman dine kongdo tembe rinpa chetawa yendo tsenzin rakwa tang dengda tamo tang yurengdo rangka juyla jisun derwa yin sema pongkarwa parto rinpa yendo yonzu pongwa chor joba te tena nambar mato pa zong tembe kisaban do yore nambar mato pe zong tembe dole chetar chongba yino.
These four attributes are to be surrendered in respective order, that is, in their above order of appearance, which is their progressive order of difficulty, the difficulty of abandoning them. First, the coarse are to be eliminated, then the middling, followed by those which are fine, and those which persist in one's own mind strength for a very long time indeed. Doing it this way is how the attributes are surrendered entirely, as taught in the sutra presenting non-conceptual retention. This is how it's taught in the sutras that these four types of clinging to characteristics are abandoned.
Tela nengenpa lenpa jo docha kyeda ngaja thalo thato la sopa nyomomba nam so koyne nyomomba chuzu chorpa namne tseman madropa rangyiki madropa to laye yin yong labse chowa che le labse muntun so lan tsemar khenbam denbar khenbam dene rakwa te tangbor pong le labo pong tangbor pong wa jo.
Because all causes of inappropriate grounding, such as attachment and so on, which constitute the factors associated with complete affliction, are easy to understand and easy to renounce, the attribute of clinging to unfavorable factors is coarse and hence surrendered first. So first what you give up is clinging to the characteristics of the five poisons, attachment, and so on. So why is that the easiest to give up? Because it's the easiest to see that these five have no inherent nature. And also, it's easiest to renounce them because it's easiest to see that these are the ones that cause the problem. These are called the causes of inappropriate grounding. So that means, grounding here means like how you set yourself. You set yourself up with your motivation. And then you just go in that direction. Because whatever actions you take are motivated by your mind state. So if you have these five poisons as your mental motivation, then you perform actions and you experience the results of being motivated by them. And that produces suffering. So it's easiest to see that, and it's easiest to get tired of that, and it's easiest to see that these actually have no inherent nature. So that's why these are the most coarse, and that's why these are what, on the path, one abandons clinging to first.
Dinyembo, docha dinyembo mudoba gomba sola, yuntin to tabe tseman rungpo te madhupa so lan tseman zemba nyembo lan tseman zemba tene te ichi supung.
Because viewing the remedies for these, the idea of repulsiveness and so on, as ends in themselves, is a middling degree of attribution, its elimination succeeds that of the former. So whereas it's easy to see that the first ones are negative, then you have the remedies for these, which you think are positive, which you naturally think are positive, like you have too much desire to see the faults, the repulsiveness of the object that you feel attachment towards. And then, if that alleviates the suffering you experience due to attachment, then you think that's something good, that remedy. So that's harder to abandon than the first one. And that, therefore, it's given up second.
Tegini,
third, because the suchness is the unsurpassable remedy for all factors to be relinquished, and because it is the actual point to be realized, clinging to it and entertaining attributes in its regard is a subtle degree of conceptualization, difficult to let go of, and hence surrendered at a later stage than the former. This is talking about emptiness, the true nature of reality, the unsurpassable remedy for clinging to whatever it might be. And since it is that, since it's the actual thing that you're trying, wishing to attain a higher realization. Since this is not something to be abandoned, for as long as one is traversing the paths and levels, this subtle concept is linked to one's mindstream for a very long time, until non-conceptual original wisdom has reached its full maturation. So wherever you are on the path, you always have an idea that there's one step higher to go, until you reach the level of complete and perfect enlightenment. You still have some idea that there's something left to achieve. And so therefore, this clinging to realization, you can't possibly abandon until you attain
the perfect Buddha.
So it's
the last one to go. Nyeba dzema bamba la joba yone namje mendoe bada nyembo deje nyeta doba.
Now from Milarepa's meeting with Likur Charua, please sing the song called Appearance and Emptiness, Appearance and Sound, like Reflection and Echo.
On beginning on page 3. No jinjitin nami se. Tinan dana dina ta meba, tinta meba, ne meba. Nama meje namrek me, nami ba hi savate, nambar mato hije, senin dojin jobai. Nama lena chutamje, namke tierna nanzero. Dozi las, dozi tamje jumaso, tower nama in zero.
Now we'll look on page 149. the defining characteristics of wisdom in terms of its effects. The sphere of experience, it opens. Gautam, keep you shaking.
Oh, got it. Give you shake it. Tell him to get it. Right. Got it. This one.
This one. And here the root verse is read. The defined.
The land, singing, jukwane, namba somji, hisate, chuni, neba, nilene. Nisumiji, Nama lene chu tamje, namke jernyam nansero, duzi tamje jumasu, tavar nama yinze. Yeah, that's how Jain don't
do. We'll recite together once.
Chuni jin tsini len jubane, namba somji hibar sati. Chuni ranga ngola, jetava yinze neben tsini dang. Chuni tela, nami du yakben tsini dang.
The defining characteristics of the sphere of experience here encountered as the effect of actualizing non-conceptual wisdom should be known to consist of the following three aspects. So when you realize, when you manifest non-conceptual wisdom, what's that like? That's what's going to be explained. First, you have the traits of actually settling in the essence of pure being. So that refers to what's actually settling there is original wisdom itself. What are the characteristics of the wisdom as it settles in to essential reality? Then second, the traits of placement within that nature when no appearances are experienced, and the traits of a placement involving appearances.
Dela tambo chu tamje je chuni tegeni ton tam bedemba nyela neba nyele ne se zum yo da nan zem besem de zum de ni sam yan demba ni su ni su lu yer me je ta de to yer me je ma ke ma ken tam nam ba kang do yan ju de me be chuni la Rapta ne bese.
Look at each of these cases more closely. One effect is repose in pure being, the suchness of all phenomena. So this describes the characteristics of non-conceptual original wisdom abiding in pure being, the nature of reality. And from one perspective, this is presented like the experience of somebody on the path, or the Buddha at the time of the fruition. What is it like for them when original wisdom for them rests in pure being? But from another perspective, we should understand is that this is describing the ground. This is actually how it always is. That wisdom and pure being are undifferentiable. So it has each of those components. And the description of it is, this means that one actually settles in pure being, which is non-dualistic, in that there is no dichotomy of perceived and perceiver, and no differentiation of two things. Relative and ultimate, apparent and genuine. There's no differentiation of two truths by a discursive intellect. It is also inexpressible through any linguistic device or in terms of any extreme whatsoever. The ultimate case of this is the wisdom of a Buddha, which, in comprehending the two truths to be indivisible, i.e. to be of one taste, beholds pure being simply as it is. There is, however, an approximation of this on the path of learning, the path of meditation or the path of learning. Fourth of the paths. So that describes the quality of the experience of wisdom as it's resting in pure being itself. It's non-dual, it's inexpressible, it's
inconceivable.
And if you want to talk about the most perfect, unerring experience of that, it is the wisdom of the Buddha. Nothing else, nothing short of that, experiences pure being beyond concept perfectly.
Neba matobi yiki nama maba ni tobale. Nambar matobi yiki nama maba tobane. Deta. Tome wanhila wanshi te tome re, tome wanshi la zongze nyi su nawa tang ne. Nyi nang te la te tar to tenpar shin ne, tokpa ta chepi ye che. Che tar nawa te la te tar te re, ngompar shenpa te, nanga jopa te ye chi jopa jopa. Nanga jopa me ye che zongze to tokpa ta. Make so nanke, make the nava so. Nanke wang bota. Zook so, zook dra tre ro reza so, see your tang. Make a nam chi so. Number at bata. Make a nam chi nam and nam chi so, number at bata. Tumon no jinji tinder nam and the da. Dada tamje, tamje ne tamje to note, mebe sena, te kangi chang, chepar san mebe, te hini roche to nawane, tomba nila, nina no bachi sao. Ya. Te la hima tape ton trokten bandine, rembata. Wangbo soji shiba tada meba, naga tinta meba, shiba jeva nesam tin meba, yorta nama mijin, yujin namba rikpa meba, tumunga tin nojin ne meba shisawate, chordi namba matobi shijin sinyi tenpa yina, tene te yin shikwin dole sungba yin tu juba yina. Jeta na kuncho tsepun dole vaisong ke shubale. Vaisong ta chi savan denan ta jeko. Mata chi savan denan ta niso. Ta teni ji wukang yinba teni. Jeto maipa, tento maipa. Ten ma yinba, nama maipa. Namba rikwa maipa. Nepa maipa. Vaisong denan ome lam. Chutam jela yangda par sosor tokwa wo. Hisao, so so to qua hisao, ya. Yente, duze duma soje kan kando yang, mato pao, te se, te ngola, nama te ta ke risu cheba me te, chuni ta, nisa me par, rangsar pao. Jetava tope yishi je doksha ni tina tato tiye ngansura rangyili mayo te yuwa mi jinto. Je nyepe yishi, kunzum chenpe yishi je nama tamje nyamla mandipa zikpan jonte. Ngarmi songjik do rongo. Ji sekshe na chunye te yinye je ngangto chutamje ro nyambale mayo jinto chutamje namar seje. Tenyi mungarwa yendo. Chunyi zikpa yishi je rana la nawa mungarwa mangawa sharya. Tetan tere mikpa mepe chani. Konga nami da tenpe don yonzo zoba yende. Tamarpe nina lazo be rangin lende be so. De shindo karchewe sabdon te chusikye pao ya.
And one effect relates to an attainment of non-conceptual wisdom, where appearances are completely absent. That is to say, where the following have in all aspects and in every way subsided. What appears to the non-conceptual sensory faculty as a duality of perceived and perceiver. Here we're talking about the basic perception of your sense consciousnesses of some outer object. That occurs in a non-conceptual way, but even that subtle perception of mind does not appear here because it's dualistic. The process of formulation conducted by the rational mind, which is conceptual, and first makes the assumption that whatever appears to be a duality actually exists that way, and then formulates it by assigning a specific term. This is a process which is internal and equivalent to the rational mind's conceptualization of percept and perceiver. So once you perceive something non-conceptually, then your mental consciousness thinks, oh, I see something, and that's actually there. And then you give it a name, and then you think the object and the name are the same thing. Then you have this idea of duality. That also does not appear. The inner faculties, that of the eye and so on, eye, ear, nose, tongue, and body, do not appear. Outer objects, forms, sounds, smells, tastes, bodily sensations, these do not appear. The principles of awareness, meaning the eye, sense consciousness, the ear, sense consciousness, and so forth, and so on, and vessel-like worlds appearances experienced in common, meaning the appearances of the outside environment, have subsided. Since these are all absent, suchness free of all these types of differentiation appears in its one taste. So since there are no more dualistic appearances, then what appears is undifferentiable suchness, because there's no more difference in anything that appears to wisdom. So you experience the one taste of everything. This is what is referred to as the subsiding of dualistic appearance into emptiness. So these six, just listed, and in the same order, correspond to there being no act of observation on the part of any consciousness, sensory or otherwise, meaning no dualistic mental activity at all. None can be found. No linguistic description. No support or ground for the incidence of consciousness. No appearance of objects to be observed. No principles of awareness as observer. As well as no place in the form of a vessel as the support for common experience. Which is how the traits defining non-conceptual original wisdom are taught here. This corresponds to the way they are expressed in the sutras spoken by the Tathagata. For example, in the Mosaic of the Rare and Supreme Ones, requested by Kashyapa, this sutra the Buddha taught, Kashyapa, permanence is one extreme, impermanence another. The middle between these two extremes is where there is no analysis. So that means that in between the two extremes, if you analyze, you can't find anything. No description, no support, no appearance, no principles of awareness, and no place. None of these appear. Kashyapa, this is the middle path, and is called intimate and detailed discernment of phenomena correctly applied. What is taught in the preceding quotation is then related in a similar fashion to self and no self. Samsara and nirvana, existence and non-existence. Right, so this is all quite important because up to now, it keeps saying there's none of this and none of that. It sounds like you're just stuck in this black hole. But it's not like that. It's beyond self and selflessness. It's beyond existence and non-existence, both. So it's inconceivable. Where the middle between the two, in each case, is taught as being free of analysis and so forth, as above. Meaning that you can analyze, but you can't find anything. You don't find existence or non-existence. Hence, what is called wisdom devoid of appearances is one which transcends the parameters defining appearance as described above. So if there were non-existence, that would also be an appearance. You'd have a dualistic appearance and you'd think there's nothing. Right? But it's beyond something and nothing, both. And therefore, it is itself the clear light. All pervasive as space. So it said that it pervades everything and it transcends everything. This is called non-conceptual original wisdom, free of appearance. It is essentially beyond consciousness, meaning beyond our mundane dualistic mind, and is thus not restricted to any domain whatsoever. So since it doesn't perceive in a dualistic way, it has no hindrance. It's all pervasive. So it's not restricted to any domain whatsoever, whether that of the composite, the non-composite, or any other. The composite are all things, and non-composite are the absence of things. It's not restricted by existence or absence. Since this means original wisdom itself does not fall into the category of appearances, it is not something distinct from pure being, but is its intrinsic luminous clarity. It's inseparable from pure being, that is the non-dual true nature of reality. It is its own luminosity. It is self-illuminating. This wisdom could be explained in terms of its facets. So the two facets of wisdom, you can explain it in lots of different ways, but here there is first the wisdom realizing simplicity, and second the wisdom realizing complexity. So what that means, the wisdom realizing simplicity means wisdom realizing the true nature of reality beyond concept. And wisdom realizing complexity means actually knowing about the details of all the dualistic phenomena that there are. So the Buddha, the wisdom mind, has both. And it's all knowing. It's the sense it knows the nature of everything, and it knows everything that appears to any sentient being anyway. And so that's simplicity and complexity. So now it's going to talk about that. So without ever stirring from the inherent state, which is the wisdom realizing simplicity, the wisdom associated with complexity sees all appearances as equal without mixing them. These two facets of wisdom cooperate in unison without any contradiction. So it's no contradiction to non-dualistically know the nature of everything. And at the same time, know everything that dualistically appears to everybody. So that's totally inconceivable. But if one asks how this could be so, while no phenomenon ever wavers from equal taste in the depths of suchness, which is pure being, the entire world of phenomena is nothing but appearance. And just as these two, phenomena and suchness, are not in contradiction, appearances, which are the self-manifestation of original wisdom contemplating pure being, manifest without hindrance, even though these do not exist as this and that objective focal referent. From this perspective, the picture of absence of appearance presented above is complete, since the dualistic makeup of appearances with everything that ordinarily goes with it is hereby transcended. Right, so these last few lines are crucial to understanding this point. Because the reason why we would think there would be a contradiction between knowing non-dually and non-conceptually, and at the same time knowing everything that appears, the concepts, in a dualistic way, is because we think of in these binary opposites of existence and non-existence, and think there's a contradiction. So when we hear non-duality, that sounds like non-existence. When we hear duality, that sounds like existence, and it seems like they're contradictory. But the point is that they are all actually appearance and emptiness undifferentiated. There's no difference. The appearance and the emptiness are not separate. The wisdom and the appearance are not separate. And that's why they're not contradictory. This profound point has been given the very thorough consideration it deserves because of its immense importance.
Sasu.
30.
다짜제도
이네 숨바
아
여러분 책이 있어
그래 바로 숨바
자와기 자와 자와 야타나 납치나 줄라
숨바도 야타 어레 숨바 Sumba nama le ne chetarwa. Sumba nama le ne chetarna. Nyamja to ne chutam je ro nyambate. Te yinyi jingor mekpar samega. Penna namke cher ta nyamba nyita namase. Nyamja te ta jili to be yishichine. Dosebe chutam je chetan kang nama maluba nahi rangi madrupa jumata mikjita malan laso batava nama imbase nyamji meba songji do choba tato bana sanje jisar jongse nyamja jitab ye meba te sanje jisar teta jitun bata kare Tetan Tumbam Pakwe Papa Salayang Jintembe Sata Chandrava Chandrava Tengalanji Pi Yi Sangak lam je pi yehi, jule jeba nayan, jongte tapsa besero. Sordi tartok sanje je, jeta jini je yehi namba nibu, zeksorta. Floblando nyamja nanje nami mangarve, ne hi gube, hindo karche besero. Chudon chonze dan che te hebae.
Then on page 157, the commentary continues, there is also one effect which relates to appearances present. And how so? During meditative equipoise, every phenomenon is of equal taste in having the essential non-referentiality of the suchness. In other words, from the perspective of suchness, every phenomenon is equally imperceptible. Since to illustrate this with an example, the experience of these is completely equivalent to the experience of the center of open space. So when appearances are experienced by original wisdom in equipoise, it experiences them like looking at the center of open space. And from the point of view of the wisdom attained in the wake of such an equipoise, i.e. during post-meditation, whatever phenomena consisting of formations might appear, and however they might do so, none of them verifiably exists with a substantial makeup, even though they appear, since all of them are appearances that are like illusions, mirages, dreams, and so on. So that describes what it's like for all those who have not yet attained enlightenment, where there's still some difference between meditative equipoise and the post-meditative state. But then, the text continues, the ultimate achievement of union, in which there is no differentiation between a meditative and post-meditative state, occurs at the level of Buddhahood. An approximation of this occurs on the levels achieved by noble beings, and there is a partial resemblance to it in a mind stream where the symbolic wisdom of the mantric path has manifested due to profound skillful means. This is another important point, and has therefore required a somewhat detailed explanation. Since one needs to understand that there is no contradiction between the ultimate way in which a Buddha sees via the two aspects of original wisdom as associated with simplicity and complexity, and the meditative equipoise on the path of learning, whether this is accompanied by the process of appearance or not. In other words, there is no contradiction between the wisdom of the Buddha that is the wisdom of simplicity and the wisdom of complexity. Those two are not contradictory. Also, the description of meditative equipoise with appearance and without appearance are not contradictory. And in order to understand these very subtle points, it's necessary to read this section very carefully. But when you do, you'll start to see that it's really describing the same thing, just from different perspectives.
That's it.
Now let's recite it together. Let's now sing from last night's chapter, Rangdeng Skyke, the first song called The Eight Ornaments of the Profound Being.
Arvedi jeden jenje lama doy naju dharmeje to baje laja choje gam jenje dengon lena ne maru na kujo se bangai jaj adron do na ne je bala tadraje dawa meze Nore da dirvaze je doji Nam doji kura de bala Ramzong ke gomba me zera Nyam nyong da dirvaze je doji Chocho ranzara da bala Ronyo je je ba me zera Tudu da dirvaze je doji Jodan dirvaje jendu de donge nyam nyung je bala nyinje je damwa meze wa ye dan dirvaje jendu to nye je zanang ze ba sala je ramba meze lamda dan dirvaje jendu raje ze zur jor wala Se je ge zanje meze, kuje dan der roje je doje, dore da menga den bai, jude je lama meze, tuje dan der roje je doje, te de nyinge je wala, ne den je lama meze, mu dan der roje je. Doje, Lorzim da da veje bai, Nyanzo gombele bai, Jepen darone bai, Kondo ngondo kyeze bai, Deva semzende bai, Tamje jek do do bai. Ta gomda nyambo. Gomda nyambo yangzi che.
Sing and meditate. While you meditate, sing.
Yeah. Ramdeng nambo la. Rechong patan dragon rirpa nyi. Naro ta meti tava la. Ta takum len trute drolen se pa kapsa sompa rendo. Tene konyi. Tua pa javishare. Kocho se pa ngajanyi sondo. Tise na. Ya. Tosa. Tua pa shukchen pa javishare.
Madhavarupa sang this song to his students, particularly Raichungpa and Drigong Repa, when they were discussing the view of Maitripa and the view of Naropa. And it probably happened that their discussion turned into a debate, a big debate, because Madhavarupa sings in the first verse, all your barking and howling is merely arrogance. So it probably got a little bit louder. And then
Milarepa
stepped in with his song.
Dinin Toram Lobra, Hedra, Tanyi Hedra, Tsu, Tsuba, Dolensi, Bukapso, Jigsala De, Jiglam, Dinin Kangba, Deblakba, Demnizuba, Luxo, Pola, De Jagala, Yumara, Pola, Songa, Chiran, Songa, Chiran.
in Tibet, the tradition of debate developed where one person stands up and the other person sits down, and the person who stands up claps their hands and stamps their feet at the person who is sitting down. That's a tradition that did not exist in India. It was invented in Tibet. And you've probably seen that before, either live or on television.
Tene chik de dengi teke ranga kang kelin se na tamja kya kelin se gire lang na dengi teke tene kelin de la mando pe tarwa tang se gire nezi tang pare.
The one who is sitting down is the one who starts by making a statement, and the one who is standing up and criticizes that statement, tries to point out the flaws in that statement.
The new Zorba de Chapa Chuji singers in the Kepa Jimbuji, the Loma Sinchin Joksom says somewhere. Take up Sutene, Langna Kamba Dam, Lakba Dab Kamba Dab, Xinke Badates and Losor somewhere. They Yigitin Yamara Kanika Labdu, the Ne Shuksep Sajitella, Anin Kepa Tendure, the Ne Tela Zorba Jab, the Zorba Jab, Kalekapujon, Tin Consul.
The tradition of one person standing up like that and tying their zen around their waist and then slapping their hands and stamping their feet when they practice debate is something that started with one of the most renowned Tibetan masters of logic, whose name was Chapa Chuki Senge. And he had 13 main disciples who were also called Senge, so they were called the 13 great lions. Senge means lion. And the oral history, what is said orally, you won't find this written in any official Dharma history, but the oral tradition is that this tradition of slapping your hands and stamping your feet started when these monks met in debate, the nuns from a nunnery called Shuksep, and these nuns were too smart. So the monks could not beat them in debate unless they started stamping their feet and clapping their hands really loud. Then the nuns got embarrassed to do that, so they ran away. So you won't find that in any official history, but that's what is said, is how this tradition started.
Then it's in the case that the Zepa Janda ran Chorjong Rabo Zoya today. Samsung Tang Timbu Yere, Jig Tamja, Jig Tang Mambo to do Sosu Nini Zogre, Yang Samsung. Kanga Koko so Chek Tamja let day, then Yenda Katana Sobajab. Yenda Kam Chokani, Zikorikos and Sobajab.
There are different ways of doing this style of debate. Sometimes it's just two people, sometimes it's many people, and they pair up in a big field, big open place, so there are lots of debates happening at once. And sometimes there's a debate where one person makes the statement and then everybody else stands in a circle and takes turns criticizing.
And
the most extensive debates occur during what is called night debate and great night debate. Great night debate is when you debate all night. And the reason why they do that is that if they started debating at night and then debated all the way till dawn, nobody else would come and watch. Nobody else would come and bother them. They would have the peace of seclusion of the nighttime hours, and then they could concentrate on debate and debate all night long. That's the way it used to be done.
天才们当家的当当就是说我们陈刚嘴巴家你们你的个人在家家了当当天的我也不能都是大理了没说说陈梦嘴巴家你们你的也不能都陈梦当家家就说当当陈刚当家说那么天的不说
So this wasn't something that they did every night, but they did on special occasions. And when they did this, then they would debate all night and then sleep all day. But when everyone moved to India, then the Dalai Lama said, it doesn't look good if we debate all night and sleep all day. So he said, this tradition is over now.
When
you first debate, you make the sound of the syllable D, and you raise your right hand up, and your right hand is like the sword of Manjushri. D is the seed syllable of Manjushri, and with your left hand, you're putting it down like this, which is blocking the entrance to the lower realms. But the young monks don't all know the meaning of this, so some of them say ki instead of di. And they think it's all a big joke.
So this is a tradition and it's good for you to know about what
this tradition
is like. But in
this is something that only happened in Tibet. When the Dharma was in India, they didn't have this tradition of standing up and sitting down like that.
Then the Sutta Lende Lagihi Rabdin Se Yore Konga Tsoepa Lukso Zo Then the Kanga Pata Pomo Cheba Meba Tsoepa Lukso Chachi Zo Tanda Yoda Miha Kumasa.
When Geshe Rabdin first went to Switzerland and started teaching the Dharma, then he taught debate to all of the students, men and women both, and they all debated together. Beginning, now it's like I don't know some darshan.
Then Tengsang Waranasa Lan Toram Lobra, Yeren Toram Lobra, the Jagarje, Samskiri Lobra, Chembo, the Drenazure, Tela Tsuebaka Chembo Chigamare, Kainisana, Tejokri, Tsuebala Angito.
At the Central Institute of Higher Tibetan Studies in Saranac, in India, then they don't emphasize debate because it's like a normal university. All the examinations are written exams, and debate is something very difficult to give a grade to. So they just don't do it. They rely on written exams.
Yang Baba so the Zhuba la gavo yere kanyi sena po nam tambo le dene Zhuba jab la ba dab kamba dam na zupo la chou ta gre yang tiyang Zhuba la gavo to nyikogumare zupo la chou ta gre.
Tibetans like debate because Tibet is a cold country, and if you get to talk while you stand up and clap your hands instead of your feet, then you stay warm. And also, you don't fall asleep that way. So it has a lot of positive qualities to it.
Yang gabu jom zin jik tam jala de ne de la de ne traba mangbo ka tsangka jan dun zogre semu yang se chogre.
And also, if one person makes the proposition and then he's answered or criticized by a group of others, then they all fight to be the one who gets to make the criticism one after the other, and they have fun. They have a good time. So it's a way to have a good time also while you're studying and debating.
Then the Kongsong Tsangka Jia, Tsangka Jia, Bijunzi, and the Jia, Tamja Dila. Recognize it, tang mato, no mamma, book, check it, tell you, as an acatelli as a children, then they must have made tell you as a tang. Then that was injected.
If one person makes a proposition, then everybody else thinks they have the best way to criticize them. And so they all elbow their way in to be the one and gets to it. They say, no, you don't know, I know how to say it. The other one says, no, you don't know, I know. They all want to be the one who gets to say it and clap their hand first. Then that's the one who has to be answered. So each one has his own line of attack.
Then
they're all looking for the way to analyze and to criticize, show the logical flaw in the person who's sitting down reasoning. And if they're all elbowing each other like this, then when it's cold, then you get warm.
If you were just sitting there with your book,
then you'd get cold and fall asleep. You're just sitting with your book and you had to read it in your own room. And you'd get cold and fall asleep.
Then they took two jets over by Jack Sorte, Malare, Peter Enric, Le Corsaire, Major Pajak, and the Wa, then Malare, Pengorsung, the Wa, then
Tortaka,
Sopaja, Tortati. Then they done the Zopet sectors of Dorjing Gorsung, the Wa, then.
The person who realized Siddha's debate is exemplified by Malarepa. When he was criticized, then he displayed miracles. And then he sang his answers to their criticisms in the form of Vajra songs of realization. That's how Siddha debates. That's how it is.
May
Malare Bala, Torim Tanda, Teni, Teni, Jacobaso, Tuba Jabba Capso, the name Malare Badorji, Gordon Lamsang, Tiki, Nimbo, Song Togudo, Consoke, Gordon Togumudo, that's a Bakirachato. Young Malare Bassong does a Nimbo, Repadin Timbayere, then Malare Lomachano.
When Milarepa debated with these students from the Philosophical University, it happened this time, and also there was one time when from a different university, three of the top junior faculty came to debate with him. And they tried to debate, but Milarepa would answer with songs. And since they spent all their time studying then and not much singing, then they couldn't really sing back. So they didn't really have much they could say. And also, what the subjects of Milarepa's songs were very profound, and they ended up, all three of them, becoming Milarepa's students.
Yeah. That's the golden dozo. Tentacy. Oh, yeah. That's a good golden yambo jabre. And that's a good one.
So we meditate when we sing, so we don't need an extra time during the session for meditation because we practice singing meditation.
Tene pola malare pengombam te zore chola dengri chakur dengri tene gom khaga lajagamdo.
Milarepa's 100,000 songs was something that sung by in Tibet by those who were meditating in mountain retreats. That's what you would sing in a cave, and you wouldn't have a different meditation session with that than that. You would meditate while you sang the song.
Then tandang gortang gom nyambu lukso
sa parang nasa. So that's what we're practicing here, singing and meditation together.
Then ipacha ta sa pachan doon ba da yang gom nyambu sa kuri.
And it's the same we're doing Vajrayana ritual practice while you're doing the ritual, then you meditate. It's like that.